Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air with Dan and Alex, available wherever you get your podcasts. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. I'm great. I'm in your country of origin.
You are in Greece, and you have been sending me the most beautiful, I'm not surprised because almost everywhere is beautiful there, but you've been sending some really beautiful photos, and I'm very jealous that I am also not there because September is an amazing time of year because none of your fellow cousins. not the Swedes. I think the Americans. It's the Americans that flood Greece, bless them, over the summer. So
yeah,
none of the Americans are there. The tourists are not there. You've got the place to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I've barely seen any Americans, but I also, last night, I was like, Oscar, have we seen a single family our entire 5 days so far in Greece? And he was like, I don't think so. So yeah, like the families are not here, but we've had the most amazing time. Yesterday we rented a boat and we went out and we found a private little bay with a beach where there was no one else.
You could only access it by boat.
Every American
describing Greece about the private little boat, finding this private little bay as if, you know, you are the discoverer.
No. 100%. 100%. It's not, I'm not saying it's a new thing. It's just that there is something so magical about being able to do that. And it's so rare to be able to rent a boat without a license. Like, most countries don't allow that. But in Greece, they're like, sure, take it.
And I feel that might change because there is actually a lot of discussion domestically within Greece as to the legality / the safety of that, to be honest. Because there have been some pretty high-profile incidents that have come as a result from the very relaxed laws over hiring a boat. So I don't know if that will still be the case, for example, this time next year, as to whether or not you will just be able to do it. But for now, as you say, for the vast majority of people who are sensible, it's an amazing thing to be able to do. There are, like with anything, some that sometimes spoil it and have ended up in some really awful situations that have dominated the news agenda in Greece for quite a while.
I mean, it is quite shocking, and especially the fact that you don't need to leave a deposit. I think they could at least, you know, make you leave a deposit so that there's something at stake for you if you damage the boat or do something bad. But anyway, I flew here on Aegean, which I really wanted to talk about because I have not flown Aegean since 2017.
Wow.
I finally flew them again. Only a two-hour flight, and we opted for economy because business was $300 more per person, which we were like, don't think so. And look, my image of Aegean, I think, was a little more rosy than the reality. I was like, they are not a European airline. They are in a different league. But, first of all, the crew was fantastic. And I've never, even on Singapore Airlines, I've never, ever experienced a crew that is literally made up of 100% young model looking women, which I was like, but I just feel like the whole thing about Aegean serving meals is, yes, so they serve like a little hot meal, but I feel like it's giving me Europe 2010 vibes, where you're kind of like, or would we be better off without this meal and them just like lowering the fare a bit because they're consistently more expensive than most other airlines I noticed flying to Greece? Or investing in like really good buy on board. And this is going to be such an unpopular opinion, but I'm just like, if you're like, who wants a dry, tiny little panini or something anyway? Is this, am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. I think it does depend. There are definitely meals in quotation marks that they serve that would leave you with that opinion. So I get that. And then you think, actually, if they are justifying higher fares than their competitors because of something like, you know, 50 cent dry panini, then obviously you'd rather not have it and, yeah, and they lower their price or offer buy on board. But there are examples, and I think it does depend on the time of day, Dan, but there are examples where they have, for example, that dinner service on flights above 2.5 hours is really popular.
That could be it.
I mean, there's a lot of Greeks that go on specifically about the moussaka that is available on Aegean, you know, in economy on an evening flight. They all say that the quality of the food, it's really widely recognized as something that Greeks look forward to and compliment about the airline Aegean. Now, that isn't always the case if it's, for example, a mid-morning or mid-afternoon or sector less than 2.5 hours or whatever. And then I think you're presented with something a little more unnecessary, as you said. So then if your expectations were you're hearing about this airline with food and beverage and in-flight dining that's so popular because it's skewed by the longer haul sectors, the 2.5 plus evening, for example, with dinner, then, yeah, you're going to have a bit of an anticlimax. So I can understand why you felt that way.
And also, Aegean has the thickest, heaviest in-flight magazine I've ever seen.
That's such a funny... It was such a funny coincidence that you came to the exact... I sat and I said to my mum, feel how heavy this is. And she was like, what? And also is full of... I mean, I think page one is on about page 40 because of the adverts, right? And she said, what the hell? Like, that's very heavy. And then I was explaining to her that, do you know why most airlines don't have onboard literature anymore? She said, why? I said, because of the weight, because of the, you know, the total amount of weight that it added and therefore required more fuel. And as airlines tried to economize, they realized that onboard literature has to go. Meanwhile, Aegean here is printing, it's like 400-page in-flight mag, 300 Gucci adverts, and 100, you know, nice pieces about Greece, but really rare.
I'm just like, this times 180 seats is a crazy amount of weight to be adding to the aircraft.
Yeah, it's, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
What aircraft were you on?
So... until a few hours before the flight. So I flew Nice to Athens, and a few hours
you flew from Tunis to Athens.
Oh my God. We'll get into that.
And for anyone that thinks I just misheard, I did not miss
it. I flew from Nice, France, not to Nice, Africa.
France, not Tunis, Africa. And again, don't write into us now and say, don't refer to Tunis as in Africa, it's in Tunisia. We know we are referring to something that has gone viral. And if you don't know what we're talking about, open up social media and type in Nice, France or Tunis, Africa. And then you'll
have to spell out comma, C-O-M-M-E. But anyway, I flew from Nice, France and... until a few hours before the flight, I was so happy because Oscar and I were stressing a bit about our carry-on allowance, but we were supposed to get the newest A320neo in Aegean's fleet. So I was like, surely this has the XL bins, the cabin is going to be amazing. And go figure, then the plane actually takes off from Athens heading towards Nice. And I'm like, are you serious that we ended up on Aegean's oldest A320 instead? But the whole day it had been planned to be operated by this A320neo, so that was a bit of a bummer.
We went from newest to oldest. Does that mean that you had the old cabin with the red curtains and the black leather seats?
I think so. I think red curtains sound familiar. It looked very old.
Were they very slimline black leather seats with the white?
Extremely slimline and
old fleet. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's their new cabins are 10 times better. So much better.
I was supposed to experience that.
They've got brand new seats. The seats are nicely padded. The cabin is really well designed. It's very light and airy in the color palette. It's different tones of blue. Actually, yeah. It feels a whole different experience than that ratchety old thing you just sprung.
But I am very excited to see what they do with especially the soft product on the A321LR/XLR. I hope we get to try it together and see what they do for long haul, because I'm sure that will be really good. And as we said, they just need to add some Greek boarding music. I think that's very missing. They need to add Greek amenities.
In business class, there's more evidence of that. So the last flight that I did from Rome. Okay, so yeah, you're right. They definitely need some kind of Greek instrumental boarding music to get that feeling flowing through your veins at the time of boarding. You're ready for Greece. There are small details, which again, as a true Greek airline, is suitable and adequate and appropriate. For example, they're one of the few airlines, I think maybe the only airline ever, where they are actually serving Greek yogurt, not Greek style yogurt, which is rife and everywhere. So everyone is able to get away with calling it Greek yogurt when it's Greek style yogurt, but actually 100% pure Greek yogurt. That's a small but important detail. They have a really good selection of wines, Greek wines from across Greece and the Greek islands, including Santorini, where they're famous for wines. So in business, there are all these small touches that really, really make the experience true of Greek hospitality and Greek dining and drink and so on. But you're right, there are different ways that it could filter out. I do think that your experience was skewed in that older cabin. I do.
Yeah.
I think it's... So, for example, you didn't have the in-flight entertainment then?
No. What in-flight entertainment?
It works similar to the Blue Box scenario, which is where you connect to the onboard Wi-Fi and you have the choice to either buy an onboard Wi-Fi package to stream or to whatever. But if you don't buy the onboard Wi-Fi, the portal when you load Safari that allows you to choose what Wi-Fi options you might have, if you don't choose the Wi-Fi options, complimentary, you still have a moving map, plus you have around a dozen movies and around another dozen TV shows that you can watch and stream for free embedded in Aegean's in-flight entertainment portal. And that's really nice, because if you didn't download anything before, you just connect. And my dad is always flying on Aegean, and he didn't even know. He just said, I don't need Wi-Fi for a couple of hours. But I said to him, but if you connect, you'll see the map and there are decent new movies and TV shows. And so he all this time, I don't think they publicize it very well, because they make a very, very quick brief announcement. And otherwise, if you don't connect, you assume that it's chargeable and it's not at all. So I like that.
But I did have Wi-Fi. I'm not sure about the entertainment, but the good thing was that they have free texting for Miles and Bonus members. So yes. I connected to that. But there's some sort of loophole, because you can use Flight Radar just on the free texting plan. So the whole flight, I was on Flight Radar having fun. Ooh. So yeah, that's a little hot for you. Anyway, let's get into the
news. How was your approach into Athens? Final question.
We landed at like 11 p.m. So I saw nothing. It was pitch black.
Oh, okay. That's a shame.
Yeah. But the way that the traffic merges from all different directions to land in Athens is quite interesting. I was a bit like, okay, are we getting a bit close here and there as I was looking on Flight Radar? But we landed and everything was fine. Luckily, we didn't get a bus gate, because when I landed, I remembered, I was like, oh yeah, bus gates are quite common on Aegean, but we pulled into a normal gate. So that was good.
That's good. And actually, even with, for example, bus gates, they always have the dedicated business class bus, which again is something they don't really need to do for a flight that's less than 2 hours, you know. And
it's rare. And
there's not
in
many
Europe.
Passengers that's... in business. Yeah. So they remind me of Swiss in that sense. But anyway, good to hear that you're enjoying your Greece trip. And I'm sure you're going to have another great day ahead. Let us move into some of this week's hot topics in what we are looking to discuss. And we'll make our way over to the UK, where London Gatwick, the second busiest airport in the UK after Heathrow has finally had a green light from the current Labour government for its second runway. So the government have approved the plan, which will bring the northern runway, which already exists. And of course, these runways are too close together, which is why it's not in use. The northern runway will be brought into routine use after some alteration, mainly an extension that means that they can alter the proximity between aircraft. And so by the end of this decade, 2029, they are hoping to have that in operation. What did you think when you saw this news? I know you said that you were commenting on that it was really significant. And then I'll give you some context as to how we got here.
Well, my first thought was, oh my God, I manifested this. Because when I was flying into Gatwick last month, I was like, why have I never questioned why this other runway isn't active? What is the deal with this? Because currently it's used as a taxiway, right? Or a reserve during maintenance on the main runway.
Exactly.
So I started reading up on it, and I was like, oh, they're just a few meters too close to each other. That's so stupid. And there's been discussion of moving it. And now we read that this is actually coming to fruition. They're going to move it. And it's amazing because this Heathrow debate about getting a third runway, will they get it? Will they not? I feel like it's always just a discussion. And at this point, like, how long has this been a talking point that is never, ever happening? Like,
since before you and I were born.
Yeah, it's
seriously.
just, whenever I see discussions of that, I'm just like, yeah, sure. But now we have a realistic plan with a runway that already exists. So I think it's incredibly exciting. Gatwick for me is in a better location for where I usually want to go in the UK than Heathrow. So it's great. The only question is terminal space in an airport that is already swamped, where the terminals are already full 24/7.
Well, the plans do include, obviously, terminal expansion, perhaps a new terminal and so on. So that will be addressed there. And as you said, the second runway that's already there now, it is stupidly close, and that's why they're unable to use it. But what this green light of Gatwick's new second runway is, in effect, is moving the current northern runway 12 meters, so almost like an extension, in meaning they can then bring it into safe regular use by taking advantage of the 12 meters away from the current runway that's in use, the main runway, and it means that they'll be able to have operations on both, and
My question
that would
is,
significantly boost capacity.
if they move the northern runway north, I assume, what, because if you're gonna have landings on, I assume the southern runway, maybe they'll do the north, like Nice Airport usually does. But if they do them on the south, there needs to be a taxiway between both runways so that aircraft can exit and hold while aircraft take off from the northern runway. So how is that going to fit? Because currently the northern runway is being used as that taxiway that they exit onto. Do we know anything about that?
So you have as you said, the northern runway will be moved 12 meters to the north, as you said, and that increases the separation between the two runways. And that's to meet the safety standards so that they can have the dual runway operations, which is so common everywhere, but Gatwick have never been able to do it because of the proximity. For the taxiway, you're absolutely right. There will need to be additional taxiways, cross taxiway links, and all the other associated facilities to enable aircraft to move between the runways, the apron, the terminals, without interfering with the current runway operations. So it will include that additional taxiway, and then, of course, you've got all the cross taxiway links, so the cross sections between. Then there's the work on terminal extensions and other utilities and everything to make the airline make space for the airlines to run effectively and efficiently. The interesting part, though, is that there will be limitations because Gatwick expects that the second runway will have a limited role at first. And I'm just going to bring this up so I can be absolutely correct on this. So here we go. So Gatwick will expect the second runway to have a limited runway at first, mainly for departures of narrow body aircraft such as the 320 or 737, rather than the full mix. The main runway will continue the handling of all landings and some departures. So yeah. As we would expect, it's kind of, you know, soft launching it first until they can be sure that they have ironed out everything that will be required with the change to airspace and the change to the departure and landing patterns and all of those shapes that aircraft draw in the sky when they are either approaching or preparing for takeoff. So there, that's obviously part and being factored into the plan. And then, as you would expect, like any big new project in this day and age, there are conditions that have been attached to this new for this project about the second runway, to ensure noise mitigation, the environmental impact, to ensure that they are able to increase the proportion of passengers using public transport and blah, 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 in order to not exceed those environmental limitations. Look, I'll give you a bit of the context here, right? The UK government at the moment, the Labour government, is struggling. The term broken Britain is not being thrown about by just someone like myself, but this is on the papers most day now. This is in society. When you speak to just the everyday Brit, the consensus in the UK is that nothing works anymore. That is just the harsh reality. And the government are increasingly aware of this, have faced crisis after crisis, especially over the last few weeks, basically since the back to school 1st of September period. The deputy leader and the deputy prime minister, Angela Rayner, is out. There have been a bit of a scandal and crisis to do with how much the current PM, Keir Starmer, knew about the US ambassador, so the UK ambassador to the, sorry, the UK ambassador to the US knew, and his about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And it's very, very messy, right? And this government had won on a mandate of change and growth. And so they have been holding cabinet meetings where the prime minister has said, what is on the table? Because we need growth. And for the last 2 months, Dan, the economy has not grown at all in the UK. And that's forecast to just get worse. So it's, how do we start saying yes? What do we say yes to? And of course, Gatwick has been there for ages on the shelf asking for this approval for the second runway. Heathrow has kind of had its first approval already. So this is month of the government attempting to say yes to everything in a bid to kind of get the engine of the country started again, because it's like rusted up in scandal and so on. And as a result, Gatwick is now having this decision that they've been so patiently waiting for, which is good news for the sector. It's good news for people traveling to and from the UK. The bit that I hate, and I guess the final point on this, is that we need to get, and I tweeted this the other day, we need to move past the idea, because this idea has even been echoed by the UK Chancellor, so basically the Minister of Finance, Rachel Reeves, that airports equal holidays, right? And I say this because, well, listen to this clip. I'm going to hold it to the microphone just to save you having to do it in the edit. So this is the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, speaking about the second runway at Gatwick. Here we go.
Very good. This extra runway at Gatwick will mean that people going on holiday will have a greater choice of destinations. It will mean lower costs for a family holiday. And it will also mean more good jobs, paying...
Right. My issue here is that we have to move past this idea that airports equals holidays, because what you then do by keeping up this rhetoric, and it's common across government and media, is that you undermine, you keep airports and you frame them as holiday hubs, which undermines their role as critical infrastructure for an economy, as necessary in a globalized world, as about economic growth, about £22 billion to UK GDP, about supporting 500,000 jobs through trade, through business, through exports, a necessity. When you frame it as airports equal holidays, then you put yourself on the receiving end for, well, you know, this is a luxury. Well, this is a luxury that people might not have, or this is not necessary, or this is as if, and it drives me crazy, even when there are delays with the cyber things we had over the last week with the cyber attack that hit the Collins Aerospace system that took down Brussels Airport and Heathrow and others. And again, the rhetoric is, you know, holiday makers are stuck at Heathrow. No, they're not going on holiday. Most are not going on holiday, not in September, because most are traveling for business or perhaps leisure for friends and so on. Not everyone at an airport is on holiday. We have to get past this very dated rhetoric that I believe only exists in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not only the UK, but definitely if you compare it to the US, for example, the view of flying and aviation is so different from in Europe, and people don't view it as a necessity in the same way. So in Europe, yeah. That is. So yeah, I'm excited about this. I'm excited to hopefully see it come to fruition. Something I'm not very excited about is that I just told you I flew from Nice a few days ago.
Yeah.
And something has happened in Nice. Actually, the craziest thing is that it's to Nice, a flight from Tunis.
Oh, God, you're Tunisia, right. What a horrible coincidence. Yes,
right?
Yes, you're right.
To Nice, France, was landing late in the evening at Nice Airport and got shockingly close to an EasyJet A320 on the same runway that was just preparing to take off. And this is just one of those situations.
For anyone that hasn't seen it, Dan, just explain as simply as you can the position of where the EasyJet aircraft was and where the Nouvel A320 aircraft was.
Yeah. So this is basically Nice Airport. If you know what Gatwick looks like, it's similar in the sense that they have two parallel runways that are quite close to each other, and one is used for takeoffs, one is used for landing normally. The weird thing in Nice is that, unlike in most other airports, at least that I can think of, the runway further away, so in this case, the southern runway is the one that's usually used for takeoffs, while the northern runway, the one closer to the terminals, is the one used for landings. So in this case, a Nouvel Air A320 was approaching from Tunis and was cleared to land on the northern runway, 14 left, while EasyJet was lined up to the south of that, ready to take off from 14 right. But
and when Dan says lined up, literally he means that the EasyJet aircraft had now left the taxiway and made that left turn, facing now the rest of the runway. The cabin crew will be seated for departure, and the next moments will ultimately the thrust will be increasing, and it's that sound that everyone is very familiar with on takeoff of the aircraft jet engines accelerating, where they'll release the brake and you'll be on your way.
Yeah, so they were so close. And the way that landings are staggered at most airports like this is that the landing aircraft will usually touch down, and that's when clearance to start the takeoff roll is given to the aircraft on a parallel runway that's waiting to take off, just to avoid issues in the event of a go around from the landing aircraft or something like that. So in this case, they were literally just waiting on the runway for the Nouvel Air A320 to land from Tunis. Only the pilots were lined up to the wrong runway. They were lining up to land on the southern runway when they were supposed to be landing on the north runway, which is the one dedicated to landings. So somehow they didn't see that this EasyJet A320 was on the runway. They didn't see it on their radars. They didn't see it with their eyes. So they ended up getting literally within a few meters of the tail of this plane before they noticed and performed a go around. So they started climbing to avoid a collision. And it's an incredibly scary experience. I can't even imagine for the people on the EasyJet aircraft, for the pilots,
how that felt. Yeah, this was horrifying.
Just knowing that someone else is effing up so bad and you're just sitting there waiting to take off. I mean, it's crazy.
According to the data that we have now, the Nouvel Air A320 crossed the runway threshold at 50 feet above ground level and only initiated the go-around 6 seconds later. Now, the A320 that was already sitting ready, lined up and ready, has a tail of over 41 feet. So literally, it means that the Nouvel Air aircraft, one A320, came above, flew on top of the other A320 by a mere matter of meters. It is an incredibly horrifying close call that the EasyJet passengers and crew were very much aware of. The EasyJet aircraft exited the runway. It did not continue with its departure and returned back to the apron. The flight was then cancelled, obviously, because they wanted the aircraft to undergo checks. Passengers said that they heard the extremely loud noise and strong vibrations, but obviously they couldn't see what was above them. The EasyJet captain apparently informed, honestly, by PA to the passengers that another A320 had just overflown them, he said, by around 3 meters. This could have been an absolute disaster. And it's worrying because in aviation, the safest form of transport, air travel, we are seeing an increasing number of incidents that are involving very, very close calls and near misses in relation to air traffic control. And it is a real concern because, you know, there are only so many near misses, as history has shown us, and until one of these errors goes simply too far. And while there has been no conclusive investigation just yet, the initial findings look like, as you said, Dan, that the Nouveau Air aircraft was coming in to land on the runway on the right when it was cleared to land on the runway on the left. It does seem that the weather was bad in that moment. It does seem that it was dark. There was a rain shower and so on. That's not an excuse, but it's unfortunately likely a contributor. It's just not, you know, quite unnerving. And the other part is that this, of course, follows another small concerning incident that happened just across the water from Nice at Corsica, where an Air Corsica aircraft was forced to circle for 30 minutes because the only air traffic controller working that evening had fallen asleep and they were not cleared to commence their descent, and they had not had any clearance from air traffic control, leaving the pilot circling for around half an hour before communication was finally re-established with the air traffic controller, who was working alone and had fallen asleep on the job. And of course, you know, we're all human, and everything is factored into human life in terms of tiredness and fatigue and so on. But again, just a bit concerning that we're used to these stories, I think, coming out from across the US, where the situation is much worse and with air traffic control. Mm-hmm. But these are very high profile incidents just happening in some of the safest skies in Europe is yet again another cause for concern. Okay, let's go over to Hong Kong, or rather, let's not go to Hong Kong, because that wouldn't be sensible right now, as Hong Kong is facing the worst super typhoon for almost 10 years. Super typhoon Ragasa is hurtling towards Hong Kong, a great city, a favorite of ours, and the city itself is on a form of lockdown. It has cancelled everything, public schools, work and so on, as the city braces for this really, really severe typhoon. The, I guess, slightly interesting part is that I was supposed to be flying to Hong Kong yesterday. Hong Kong was part of the plan for this week, and Super Typhoon Ragasa had other plans and has forced the city into closure because it is set to be the most destructive in recent history. So I am grateful that I was able to see these alerts before I boarded and then ended up in an inevitable kind of lockdown in a hotel room in Hong Kong for days on end. The reason I was going to be in Hong Kong was for the Roots Conference, which is a big gathering of the aviation sector to basically it's every airport around the world attend and all get together, and it's a great place for business networking and meeting up and all under kind of one roof, so you can meet everyone from airport operators in Hawaii to all the way to the other side of the world, to those in New Zealand and Australia and so on. But as I said, Super Typhoon Ragasa had other plans. It's making landfall in Hong Kong. The interesting part is I had seen these reports from a few days ago and so started to realize, okay, Hong Kong is not going to happen. And even if you can get the last flight that is cleared to land in Hong Kong, Cathay Pacific had started up, had drafted their plans to fly out, which they have now done, their fleet out of Hong Kong to ensure that their aircraft are not sitting there and damaged from everything that is expected to hit the city. And so in terms of insurance and keeping their airline jets safe, the airline jets are flying out. They're keeping Hong Kong as empty as they can at the airport. As I said, people are at home. The conference that I'm attending is inevitably cancelled, at least for the majority of it. Wasn't informed about any of this from the conference, which is a little bit of a unusual development. That they've really waited to put out a statement, and at the last minute, way too late, literally a day before Hong Kong goes into this kind of lockdown, they put out a statement that they're, you know, monitoring the situation, and it doesn't look like it's going to go ahead, but they'll see, and they're really sorry that the welcome drinks are cancelled. And it's a bit like, guys, you know, you can just do a quick Google search, and the Hong Kong Observatory and other agencies have been warning very clearly that this will not be a normal typhoon, which Hong Kong is used to, and just had one last week and the week before. But actually, this is going to be something very, very significant, and there is a risk to life and so on. So yeah, that was a bit disappointing, to the lack of communication there. So God knows how many people have actually flown in none the wiser, if they are not, you know, as attached to the news agenda as we are, and haven't known that Hong Kong are about to face this. The other part is that obviously with the conference not taking place as it is expected to, and all the flight cancellations, I'm sure that just that by default, there must have been people that first knew that Hong Kong is going to face this simply because their flight there was cancelled, and then realized why. And at that moment, I wonder if they thought, well, why didn't we hear from the organizer? So,
yeah.
What's your experience with kind of
typhoons,
traveling in a typhoon? Because I do have one at this exact same conference in 2018.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I had to look this up, because apparently there haven't been more typhoons than normal, but the amount of times it's been like typhoon in Taiwan this year, we've seen all these viral videos of landings during typhoons in Taiwan where things have gone a bit wrong this year. I mean, nothing bad, luckily, but I was flying there earlier in the summer, there was also a typhoon, and my flight was canceled. Yet when I woke up the next morning to the supposed typhoon, it was like a beautiful sunny day with no winds, and my flight was canceled. I was like, oh no. But yeah, it's weird, because this is obviously typhoon season, the summertime. Yeah. But yeah, luckily I haven't been, besides a canceled flight, I haven't had any crazy flights.
Interestingly on this, Hong Kong are actually hosting kind of press conferences and press briefings, encouraging people not to compare this one, Ragasa, to other typhoon events where they've kind of said, you know, there's going to be a typhoon, and as you say, it ends up being a sunny day. Because this is being described as a monster that is under, you know, they're saying it underwent rapid intensification over the last week to become the first super typhoon of the season. A season that has been pretty quiet, as you just said, on the whole. I mean, thankfully, where are the hurricanes forming over the Atlantic going to the US? It just hasn't been the case. And that's obviously good news for those that dread that. So it's something that they're expecting winds up to 270 kilometers an hour, the most powerful storm on Earth so far in 2025. And we hope for the best for Hong Kong. But 100%. The last time I experienced this, they keep comparing this typhoon to this super typhoon of 2018, which they say was incredibly destructive. And of course, I know all about, because I was just down the road from Hong Kong in Guangzhou, where I was locked in the hotel room for 3 nights and couldn't leave the room. The hotel ran out of food on day 3. That was concerning. And they did come over the tannoy in the middle of the night, which was, you know, I mean, that wasn't scary, having a shouting Chinese announcement at 3 o'clock in the morning, pitch black in your room, and you're waiting patiently to wonder if they're going to announce in English as well. And they did, and they said in English, "If your beds are situated near the windows, please make your way into the bathroom immediately." And I was like, what? So took the duvet and everything, and I'm in the bath, and I'm opening up news, and I'm sure I've told this story before, but I'm opening up the news and I'm live streaming CNN, and they're showing the Shangri-La Hotel, which was directly next to me, entire windows from rooms just falling out of the building, exposing the guest in the room to the outside super typhoon. Scary, especially when I knew that, like, I could see my hotel on this live feed because it was two towers and it was just next to the Shangri-La. So spent the rest of the time that we were under this lockdown in the bathroom. And I thought, never again. And again, at that point, I think in that scenario, it wasn't supposed to hit Guangzhou as hard as it did. But the communication over it from the same conference wasn't it was all very last minute, despite the obvious warnings, and China were on top of it. But yeah, I think basically wherever you're flying, give it a quick search on Twitter. Just type, you know, if you're flying to Stockholm today, type in Stockholm just to make sure, because yeah, all kind of stuff went down reminder. The other night with them. Well, what happened with the drones and stuff? There were quite a bit of activity across Scandinavia.
I don't know.
Drones in Copenhagen Airport, suspended arrivals and departures, and there's a lot. So yeah, stay informed, guys. Stay informed.
Exactly. And take care, everyone who's in Hong Kong, please. So with that, let's go to Q&A.
Okay, so I'm going to hijack this Q&A a little bit with, I had asked a question to one of our listeners, because one of our listeners, his name is Marco, and he works at London Stansted Airport, was in the unique position of handling the arrival of President Trump at Air Force One, the state visit to the UK over the last week. And given that he is a loyal listener with such exclusive insight into how, for example, a UK airport prepares for the arrival of a president, I asked Marco if he wouldn't mind putting together a little statement for us to let us know how it all went down. He's got it approved by his corporate affairs team and he's ready to share with us on the podcast. So I'm going to hand over to the voice note we received from Marco.
Hey Alex and Dan, it's Marco from London Stansted, and I hope you're both doing well. Last week at Stansted, we had the arrival and departure of Air Force One. It's actually the second time I've had the opportunity to oversee Air Force One operations, my first time being at Heathrow in 2021, when President Biden dropped in to see Her Majesty the Queen for tea. President Trump's visit marks the ninth Air Force One visit that Stansted have hosted since President Obama landed back in 2009, and we're proud to be the White House's runway of choice here in the UK.
I've just paused Marco there. The White House's runway of choice. If London Stansted don't rebrand with that tagline, then they, I don't know what they're doing, because Stansted definitely needs such a glowing endorsement, right?
Yeah. It's quite
Why
unique.
Does Air Force One come to Stansted? Well, geographically, we're really well located with many US air bases in close proximity, so great access for the military, as well as having direct access into London via the M11, if you're travelling by motorcade, or if you're travelling by Marine One, it's only a short helicopter ride. These visits bring a huge amount of planning and coordination. My team have been working on this for months. We work really closely with the US security services, our local police, and other multi-agency partners. And that level of protection, understandably, comes with big demands. That includes parking of additional aircraft, such as the President's backup plane, Marine One, other military aircraft, such as C-17s that bring the President's motorcade, amongst other assets. And as you can imagine, it puts real pressure on our day-to-day operation. But our unique layout allows the majority of our operations to continue without the whole airport coming to a standstill. Events like this highlight just how flexible and resilient the airport needs to be. We're balancing the prestige of a presidential visit whilst keeping our passengers moving. You will have seen that on departure day on Thursday from the UK, Marine One diverted to Luton on its way to Stansted due to a mechanical issue. And my command teams had to react dynamically to that, trying to figure out when Air Force One was going to depart, but also keeping the rest of the airport moving. All in all, it was a successful visit, but it doesn't come without its challenges. Finally, I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you so much, Marco, for that insight. That was interesting. What a cool project to be involved with, handling so many. Well, this is not his first time, but handling the arrival of a sitting U.S. president. Yeah, it's not his first rodeo handling the Air Force One. He and Air Force One. Well,
they go way back.
Yeah, they go way back. That's a really cool, unique project to be a part of. Not least because it is perhaps the most unusual aircraft to exist globally, especially given the nature of how frequently it is used. It's not like it's rare. And I don't know if you saw, as Marco said, Trump and Melania actually diverted from when they were in Marine One in the helicopter from, I believe they were at Chequers at that point. I don't think they left from Windsor, but I believe they were at Chequers because they'd finished the press conference with Keir Starmer. And anyway, so it was either Chequers or Windsor, and they were flying Marine One to Stansted, and then Stansted they would board Air Force One back to Washington, D.C. And the Marine One helicopter suffered a hydraulic failure, and they diverted to Luton. So Trump, you know, a sitting U.S. president, Luton and Stansted in one day? Has the poor guy not suffered enough?
I think that's karma for you. That's karma, taking him to Luton and Stansted in one day. It makes
interesting.
Me think
he had a little tour of the UK's low-cost pubs.
Where he belongs. Anyway, did you see the Spirit?
Well. We don't do politics here.
Did you see the Spirit Airlines thing where they also got a bit close to Air Force One? Well, not also, but they got a bit close, and the air traffic controller was like, pay attention, get off the iPad.
He said, get off the iPad, turn right, because Air Force One was on the left. He was like, you can see the guy, right, in blue and white. You know who it is. He said,
We have a couple more questions for you guys today before we've got to run. Here, this is not a question, but more of an input, which I appreciate, from Paul. He says, great show and good to have you back. On the A321 XLR discussion, I would be spewing if I had booked a long-haul flight on a wide-body and had an equipment change that left me on an A321. I imagine many people like me will pay more attention when booking to what the jet is that I've booked. I was recently changed from Finnair's A350 and had to rebook to a BA777, which already feels like a big downgrade for the same money. But to go from wide body to narrow body for the same price would infuriate me. I can't see long haul on these jets being popular with customers unless the pricing is much cheaper. Interesting input.
Who sent that?
Paul.
Paul, yeah, that really nice insight, because it is what we suspect is the sentiment across so many travelers, that they would perceive it to be a downgrade. But you tell airline staff that, and I don't mean airline staff, but the kind of the corporate side of airlines, and they are not factoring it in as anything that they perceive to be a downgrade. In fact, because they debut new products on it, they think it's an upgrade. But there are many that would disagree with that and share your sentiment. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Thanks for getting in touch.
And then final question for today, guys, is from Tony. He asks, what happened to Global Airlines? Did they really exist, or did I dream it?
Yeah, you dreamt it. Thank you for listening to On Air. We will see you there.
Well, they...
What happened? Yeah. They're not... I don't know. I mean, we have to ask the founder.
They posted... Actually, the last time they posted on Instagram is 6 days ago. So they're still around somewhere. But they did what they wanted to do. I think we said this, that they wanted to prove... I think it was like, I want to prove all my haters wrong and show them that I can operate an A380 flight. They don't think I can, but I'm going to do it. Once that was done, I think it was like, okay, this is a terrible idea that's going to lose us all a ton of money. So let's just silently fade into the background and remember that we had a few flights successfully, and that's about it.
The other small tidbit on that is that an A380 formerly operated by HiFly that has been in storage for 5 years, this is a separate A380, has apparently found a new owner that we are not yet aware of who that owner is, but it's not Global, who had previously said they were interested in expanding their A380 fleet when they were supposedly wanting to be an airline. So they're being known as this other A380 operators, the mysterious new A380 operator who has bought this aircraft that's set to be taken out of storage, but it's not Global. We haven't. It's one thing to keep the Instagram ticking over, Dan, so that you don't. You know, I love how that's how we're judging if companies exist today or not in the modern age. Well, they posted six
they
days ago, so someone's got
Instagram.
Access to the login. They did post on Instagram, so they must. I do think it's a little linked with what we suspected over how there seemed to be a promise that a plane will be in the air by X date, but maybe contractually in that promise there was no indication as to what would happen the week after that, or the week after that, or the week after that. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. We'll keep across it as we do.
Of course we will. And on that note, thank you for joining us this week, guys. We will see you next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.